Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. By remembering the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, a dumb man can become a poet, a lame man can cross mountains, and a blind man can see the stars in the sky. Purport by His Divine Grace. In Vaishnava philosophy, there are three ways for perfection, namely sadhana siddha, perfection attained by executing devotional service according to the rules and regulations, nitya siddha, eternal perfection attained by never forgetting Krishna at any time, and kripa siddha, perfection attained by the mercy of the spiritual master or a Vaishnav. Kaviraj Goswami here stresses kripa siddha, perfection by the mercy of superior authorities. This mercy does not depend on the qualifications of a devotee. By such mercy, even if a devotee is dumb, he can speak or write to glorify the Lord splendidly. Even if lame, he can cross mountains. And even if blind, he can see the stars in the sky. Srila Prabhupada, the key. So this is such a nice verse. And it may remind us of another verse which we often quote. Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurun dinatarinam. So there are very similar aspects in this particular verse. We're glorifying the Panchatattva, because the first few verses of this chapter, the author has been systematically glorifying each and every member of the Panchatattva. He started off by offering respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose desire I have become like a dancing dog, he says, although I am a fool. And I have suddenly taken to writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then he offers again his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya and again to Nityananda Prabhu, who is very joyful. Then he offers obeisances to Advaita Acharya, who is very merciful, and to that great personality, Gadadhar Pandit, the scholar. Then in the verse previous to this, he offers his obeisances to Srivas Thakur and all the other devotees of the Lord. And he falls down to offer them respect and worships their lotus feet. So he's concluding that today with glorifying the Panchatattva in general. And of course all these five members that we've spoken about, they're all very important aspects of the Panchatattva. Panchatattvat mukham Krishna bhaktarupa swarupakam bhaktavataram bhaktakyam namami bhakti shaktikam. Different aspects of the Lord descend, his potencies, his teaching aspect, the guru aspect represented by Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Srivas, different parts are there. And they are very, very much essential for us to advance in spiritual life. It is said that if one tries to make an attempt to worship Krishna, but does not accept the glories of the Panchatattva, then his efforts are doomed to failure. And so that should hopefully inspire us, that we, especially in this season actually of worshipping the Panchatattva, we had the appearance of Advaita Acharya a couple of days ago. Nityananda Prabhu is scheduled to appear soon, and Lord Chaitanya soon after that. So this is how the associates of the Lord prepare the way, prepare the setting for the Supreme Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come. And he comes not just on his own, but he comes not just as Krishna himself, Krishna Varanam Tusha Krishnam, but he comes not in his normal blackish bluish color, but he comes with the mood and complexion of Srimati Radharani. So we get extra mercy in this particular incarnation, because he freely distributes love of Godhead. So here in this trend of glorifying each of those fundamentally important tattvas and persons who give us access to spiritual life, the aspect of worshipping the spiritual master is included here. Prabhupada writes, Kaviraj Goswami here stresses kripa siddha, perfection by the mercy of superior authorities. This mercy does not depend on the qualifications of a devotee. So certainly for me that comes as a great relief. Because if my spiritual life depended upon my own abilities, my own ability even to follow the process strictly, I think I would be in a lot of trouble. So at least we understand that there are mechanisms put in place for us. And whichever category we fall into, we can still always take advantage of this principle of receiving empowerment from superiors. Of these three categories, we have We have sadhana siddha, those who attain perfection by executing devotional service. Nitya siddha, those who are eternally liberated, and we should never consider them to be impure at any time. And then kripa siddha, those who definitely by their own qualifications don't deserve any great spiritual credits. In this category of kripa siddhi, we have a number of persons. Of course, we are reading about Bali Maharaj in our Bhagavatam, normal Bhagavatam classes, Monday to Friday. And Bali Maharaj himself is an example of this. Of course, Bali Maharaj is in a family of demons, really. He has to associate with so many unimpressive individuals who are not devotionally minded. But he has one great quality, is that he is related to Prahlad Maharaj. And therefore, by that influence, he somehow becomes a devotee. Because obviously, if you happen to be the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, Sri Sri Radha Gopalananda Ki Jai, there is undoubtedly some impact, some samskar that is imparted. And therefore, he developed in his own way into becoming a very wonderful devotee, Bali Maharaj. So much so that the Supreme Personality decided to pay him a visit. Now, this is not normal. The Supreme Lord doesn't often just knock on your door and walk in. But he did so, and we are obviously hearing of those pastimes, how he came as a beautiful young boy. And at that time, Putana is sometimes stated as being the sister of Bali Maharaj, or sometimes his daughter. It's not quite clear. But she saw Bali Maharaj at that time. And she immediately, her feelings of motherly affection immediately came out. Because he was such a wonderful, sweet, brahmachari boy. She immediately felt some natural feelings. And she wanted to nurse him. And he acknowledged this. And he said, yes, in a future birth, I will give you that opportunity, as this is your desire. However, as the story proceeded, and Bali Maharaj ended up giving everything to Vamandev, her mood changed. And of course, I mean, she wasn't happy to lose everything. She wasn't happy to see Bali Maharaj put in ropes, the ropes of Varuna, and taken away to other regions. And so she said, no, I hate this. I will come to kill you. So therefore the Lord gave her facility to do both, or attempt to do both anyway. There's always persons who think they can kill the Lord or harm the Lord. So the Lord plays the game for a little while. He lets them think that they might be winning. So even when we see him fight with demons, he has a good fight. And sometimes it looks like he's fallen down and he's unconscious. But then he gets up and finishes the job off properly. So Putana is another example of Kripa Siddhi. Because by her own efforts, she has really no qualification whatsoever to obtain the mercy of the Lord. So we know when she comes later on in Krishna's direct pastimes, the pastime unfolds, she nurses Krishna, she tries to kill Krishna through that same act. Krishna sucks the life force out of her. She assumes this tremendous 8-mile long form. But then everyone sees that she goes back to Godhead in everyone's vision. So this is a great example of a person who really has done nothing positive or nothing favorable to the Lord. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilam bhaktiruttama. Devotional service is supposed to be performed by the advice of the Goswamis favorably for the Lord. Favorably without a tinge of karma or jnana and for the pleasure of the Lord. So definitely Putana, she did have this thought that she wanted to serve the Lord and therefore she had that privilege. But somehow by the great mercy she received from the Lord and from other devotees, she attained the position of a nurse in the Vaikuntha planets. Some say Vaikuntha, some say Goloka. That's a topic for discussion. But she attained the position of a nurse in the spiritual world, definitely. And it really shows the power of Kripa Siddha. It also highlights an aspect of the Lord, which is that he is supremely independent and supremely powerful. He does not have to work by anyone's rules and regulations. He can at any time give his highest mercy to the most sinful person. That's his choice. Jagai and Madai are, of course, examples of this. They fall into this category also. Definitely not by their sadhana did they attain perfection. They received mercy from Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda. And simply by receiving that mercy, the Lord was favorable to them. In fact, it's only by their mercy that the Lord didn't kill them when he appeared on the scene with the Sudarshan Chakra. So the Lord is always supremely independent, and at any point, he can give mercy to anyone. Agasura is another one, who had no desire to please the Lord in any way. But somehow the cowherd boys, they had some good fun, actually, while he made this tremendously big shape, and all the boys rushed into there, exploring the cave. But also he was connected to other devotees. So therefore he somehow received great mercy. And there's many, many. We could analyze all the different participants in Krishna's leelas and put them into these categories. Kripa Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, Nitya Siddha. Nitya Siddha's Prabhupada actually says that all of these three in the ultimate issue are actually equivalent in one sense, in that they become Siddha. They become perfect. Siddha is one who develops Siddhi. Now our Siddhi is not material type of Siddhi. It's not that we are after specific powers, specific mystic opulences. The perfection that a devotee aspires for is that they situate themselves in their constitutional position of being a servant of the Lord. So when one is situated like that, whatever the process was by which they got to there becomes almost insignificant. And therefore we also often hear that whatever a devotee did previously, prior to coming to Krishna consciousness, is not a major issue. It's not actually all that important. And sometimes one can actually commit an offense by considering a devotee's prior situation or qualifications, or as can be the case, disqualifications, in the pursuit of devotional service. If one has wholeheartedly surrendered to the Lord, then that is the thing that counts. So whether one has become a Siddha through Kripa, through just being eternally liberated, or through actually a strict practice of sadhana, they are to be worshipped equally. Within the category of Nitya Siddhas, there are of course the eternal associates of the Lord. If we read the Bhagavatam, we'll find many examples of Nitya Siddhas. The family members of Krishna, mother and father of Krishna, they are considered Nitya Siddhas. Prabhupada says in one place that yes, definitely they are not God. They are not Vishnu Tattva. They are Jiva Tattva. But they are Nitya Siddhas. They are eternally liberated. And wherever the Lord goes to perform his pastimes, they go with him. And they please him in that way. The Goswamis, we understand Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, definitely liberated. And there are symptoms which manifest in devotees right from a very young age. Narad Muni is sometimes termed as a Kripa Siddha, as a Nitya Siddha, and sometimes as a Sadhana Siddha also. It's interesting because during his previous birth as a maidservant, he did not directly have qualifications to see the Lord. He had received mercy, all three perhaps are involved there. He had received mercy from the Bhaktivedantas who were engaging in their duties during the four-month Chaturmas season. He served them, and he received mercy from them. So then finally, once tragically, his mother passed away due to a snake bite. Narad Muni took that as the mercy of the Lord, and he proceeded north on pilgrimage after performing whatever duties he had to do. And then the Lord appeared to him. Now this was completely the Lord's mercy. And he explained to him that actually I am appearing here just to increase your attachment for me. Normally someone who is not perfectly pure cannot attain my mercy, nor have my darshan. So I'm doing this simply to heighten and increase your attraction for me. So he gave him a dose of Kripa Siddhi there. And Narad Muni then proceeded in the activities of a sadhana bhakta. He then engaged in staunch practice, we can say. He very strictly followed rules and regulations. He followed a process of worship as he had learnt from the Bhaktivedantas. And in due course, definitely, we know what happened. He, in his next birth, almost instantly he received a body, a transcendental body befitting his status as an eternal associate of the Lord. So sometimes we see that Nitya Siddhas may appear to go through a process of Kripa Siddhi or Sadhana Siddhi. And it's interesting because that can give us good inspiration. Just as the parts that are played by these demons. Of course, we all know the whole story of Jayavijay and how they took different births. But in those specific births, they definitely were not sadhana siddhas. They definitely were not sadhana bhaktas. They did all sorts of undesirable activities. So in a particular birth, you might not be able to tell the real character of a person. They may appear to progress from a very degraded situation to a very advanced situation. But still it is the fact that nitya siddhas sometimes come down and voluntarily undergo this kind of process, just in order to teach people and to increase their faith that it is actually possible for one, even in the lowest form of existence, lowest form of consciousness, to actually progress upwards and become a pure devotee of the Lord. So in the Bhagavatam there are many examples of persons who glorify the aspect of taking mercy from devotees. One such person is King Rahugan. Now we know the story of Jad Bharat. Bharat, there's a couple of previous lives involved there. But in this particular birth as Jad Bharat, he came as he wasn't interested in the world and he didn't want to be disturbed. His focus was solely on the Supreme Lord. So he walked around like a dumb man. Dumb, seemingly deaf, and was not at all interested in what the rest of society had to think about him. So once upon a time this king of Sovira was passing through his land. And he wanted to cross an area. And so his servants, they engaged Jad Bharat. They thought, oh, you've got a nice strong body. We'll have you. You can be one of the palanquin carriers of the Lord. But Jad Bharat turned out wasn't a very good palanquin carrier. He was stumbling everywhere. He was jumping. He's not very smooth. If you've ever been on a palanquin or someone's carried you, you'll know that every footstep they take is is a major source of discomfort. If you've ridden a horse or anything like that, it's not comfortable. So similarly, the king was experiencing great distress when Jad Bharat was roaming along. He was trying to avoid stepping on the ants on the path. So if you can imagine, that added an extra feature to the journey. So if he saw an ant, he would sort of go sideways. But the person on the other side wouldn't necessarily do the same. So the king was being jolted here and there. And he finally got out and started to chastise Jad Bharat. And he called him all kinds of names. He said, you fool, you don't know what you're doing. You're just an ignorant idiot. And he went on and on, gave him a whole tirade. And he said, why don't you speak? What's wrong with you? Eventually, at a certain point, Jad Bharat started to speak. And he said, you're actually right. I am a fool. But I don't care. Because actually, I'm not this body. Everything you've said actually applies to this body, not to me. And so, although you may be walking around with this great title of the king of Sovira, who are you actually? Definitely, your body is nicely arranged with all wonderful garments. You have royal paraphernalia. You have good stature. You have physique. You have good weaponry skills. You are a natural leader. But who are you actually? You are claiming that I'm a fool, but you don't even know who I am. So then he proceeded to explain to him. And the king, of course, initially wasn't very happy with being spoken to in this way. As a king wouldn't be happy if some random person just starts criticizing them. Normally the kings dealt with such persons in a very undiplomatic way. Argumentum ad baculum, using the stick. So the king, he proceeded to question. He realized, actually, I'm hearing something which is quite advanced, not normal. And he proceeded to question him more. He said, how is it that we are all under this illusion? That we very much seem to be this body, and you're saying yet we're not this body, so who are we? So Jad Bharat proceeded to explain to him. And then King Rahugan said something very interesting. He quotes a verse which is a famous verse. Rahugan etat. King Rahugan said, tapasane yati na chejaya nirvapanat grahadva na chandasane vajalagni suryair vinamahat padara jobishekam. He said that one can attain devotional service and become a devotee of the Lord only if they render devotional service. Only if they please a devotee of the Lord. It doesn't matter whether one adopts very strictly the rules and regulations of brahmachari life, chandasa. It doesn't matter if one adopts great austerities in life, sitting in the midday sun, surrounded by coals with fire, in the heat of summer. Nor does it matter if one submerges themselves in icy cold water in winter. Nor does it matter if one adopts the principles of vanaprastha life very strictly. Nor does it matter if one becomes a sannyasi and roams the earth perfectly. None of these are important. In the ultimate issue, the fact is, has such a person received the shelter of the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee? Vina mahat pada rajobhishekam. Until one has smeared himself with the dust from the lotus feet of a devotee, one cannot actually advance in spiritual life. So, there are many examples like this which hopefully can inspire us greatly. This is actually really all we need to do as a matter of focus. There are the devotees of the Lord. The Lord has chosen them to be His intimate associates. The Goswamis very clearly explain that if we want to advance on the path of bhakti, we have to simply find an associate of the Lord and surrender to them and serve them and please them. And then by their mercy, we go back. Now, we may be wondering, what about all these other ways then? There's kripa, there's nitya siddha, there's sadhana siddha. What about the elaborate process that is described in the literatures? The Goswamis themselves write. Although they always maintain that the mercy of a devotee is the most important aspect, why do they give us so much literature? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, why do they give us so many instructions? Well, these actually serve to please the devotees. Mahaprabhu, of course, wanted the Goswamis to write very systematic delineation of spiritual life so that persons can engage in activities which connect them to Krishna. So that we have 64 aspects of devotional service, 64 items, which are considered very, very important, very potent. And by performing those, we connect ourselves to the Lord. There are many examples where we see someone has engaged in strict sadhana, strict practice, and yet there was an aspect of kripa which was required for them to become fully satisfied or fulfilled. Of course, we sing during Damodarashtakam, the pastime of Mother Yashoda and Krishna, and how we know that the rope was always two fingers too short. So the explanation given by our acharyas, of course, is that one finger represents our own endeavor. While things were going smoothly, Mother Yashoda was just trying to catch Krishna, just as she would a normal boy, naughty boy. Yes, Krishna always left the rope two fingers too short. Then when he saw that she was actually exerting herself, beads of perspiration running down her face, and she was actually becoming quite exhausted, tired, she was breathing heavily, then Krishna allowed himself to be caught. So the acharyas explain these two fingers, this special rope, the shortage in the rope represents our endeavor and the mercy of the acharyas. So these things are all very much intimately connected. Yes, we are supposed to find the most exalted person and serve them. But then service means following their instructions. And what do they do? What are their instructions? Their instructions are that we engage in the process of sadhana. So it's not one or the other. If we are to make any kind of hierarchy, definitely getting the mercy of a devotee is the highest. There's no doubt about that. That's the starting point for our devotional lives. Either we get a book of Srila Prabhupada's given to us by someone, which is a form of kripa coming to us, with instructions on sadhana within, which will allow us to perfect ourselves in due course. Or we meet a devotee who gives us some mercy, some kripa, and we engage in a process. We may not know anything about sadhana at that point. We may not know what to do. We may not know how to chant. We may not know about the four regulative principles. But simply by our association with that person, we may advance more and more. So different people have different exciting journeys in their pursuit of Krishna. And somehow or other, the Lord arranges that eventually, even if they started off by receiving some mercy despite their disqualifications, eventually they will follow this process of sadhana because it is recommended even for those who are perfected. One very good reason for this is that it gives a good example to others. People need living examples of sadhanas, of sadhana practitioners. Otherwise, if someone is simply a kripa siddha or a nitya siddha, that might not inspire the general people. Because they'll be thinking, oh, okay, these pastimes in the Bhagavatam, they're good, they're just for the perfected persons. We know Bhagavatam is the discussion of the devotees and the Lord. Oh, well, there always seems to be some trail how this demon was actually a devotee. So actually, none of this really applies to me. So simply to defeat this point, even such persons will engage in sadhana. Narad Muni engaged in strict sadhana. Dhruva Maharaj engaged in strict sadhana. Jagai and Madai engaged in sadhana. Mayadevi herself, who came to dissuade Haridas from his path, she engaged in strict sadhana. Whatever the starting point, one engages in strict sadhana. Because it's just the natural thing to do. It's the requirement that one has to go through. Sadhana, of course, in its general sense means practice. And we have our four eggs, we have the holy name. This is the fundamental sadhana for any devotee. And so, in this way, devotional service continues. There are different aspects, different wonderful paths that people take. And devotional service definitely is an adventure. And a lot of us have a lot of fun in devotional service. Sometimes a lot more fun than we had outside. Actually, ultimately, everyone has more fun in devotional service than they had before they came to devotional service. It just takes a little while. Because sometimes, as it explains in the Gita, activities in the mode of passion are very juicy in the beginning. They're enjoyable. But then in due course it becomes bitter. It becomes a bitter experience. But activities in the mode of goodness, or transcendental activities, they seem to be very bitter in the beginning. But they become relishable. Much, much, much more than normal activities. And so we all have this wonderful opportunity to take shelter of any of these categories of devotees. There are so many devotees around. Some are definitely nitya siddhas. Some are expert sadhana siddhas. We all know who they are. Some are definitely kripa siddhas. I definitely meet devotees who are definitely, by their practice, they would seem to be somewhat lacking according to our strict standards. But you can definitely see in their lives how Krishna has protected them right from over an extended number of years. It's very easy to see that externally someone's practice is definitely not up to scratch. But somehow you can see that the next time you meet that person, the person is still somehow going along and Krishna is somehow giving them shelter. So we'll see all three categories and we can use that to inspire us in all different ways. Now I would probably want to end the class there because we have another very important discussion, recollection to participate in. Are there any questions on anything else?